It's over. Ted Cruz is out. Well, you have to admit, Ted gave it a hell of a try. Especially for a guy who's essentially hated by almost everyone who's ever known him. He won the first state, Iowa, under an ethical cloud and moved on from there. He won several other states, but never established the kind of national following he thought he deserved. So, anyway, RIP Ted. Now, the Cruz lovers across the board are besides themselves. For example, Mark Levin has stated about Fox News Channel and Trump, FNC is a Trump super PAC. They'll be rubbing their own faces in their own feces after the general election. Apparently, this is a deranged reference to Glenn Beck rubbing Cheeto crumbs into his face to mock Trump. I guess Trump has an orange complexion. Glenn Beck, Teddy's John the Baptist, has now established a new standard for self-aggrandizing, self-pitying, egotistical, narcissistic, religious delusion. Outdoing himself, the talk show egomaniac stated, huge drudge font size, mocking my fast for Ted Cruz is a sign that America is done. Wow. I guess he personalizes everything. In other words, daring to mock back a member of a minority religious group many claim to be heretical is claiming that anyone who disses him is helping bring down the end of ages, the end times onto America. Whoa. A bitter teddy bear, B-A-R-E, sent home to lick his wounds, lashed out in agony against his antagonist, sputtering about Trump that he is, quote, the man is a pathological liar. He doesn't know the difference between truth and lies. Is it in a pattern that is straight out of a psychology textbook? He accuses everyone of lying, whatever lie he's telling at that minute. He believes that the man is utterly amoral. Donald is a bully. Bullies don't come from strength. They come from weakness, et cetera. So Cruz will live to run again another day, possibly for the presidency. But now the Donald begins to whet his sword for the Clinton dynasty with a smile on his face and a song in his heart. It's going to be a rich banquet of politics and personal insults, sports fans. Stay tuned. 609 Kelly O'Connell, and I wrote that last night and I read it today, and I do realize now that I was not sympathetic to the Cruz supporters out there. I do feel your pain in your moments of agony, in your hours, in your days of mourning. But I mean, the writing was on the wall for many months. It's not like it came out of the blue. It wasn't like Prince dropping at the youthful age of 57, I guess after 30 or 40 years of heroin abuse. But you know, Ted Cruz has got a lot of qualities, a lot of good qualities. I believe that if he had not insulted the Donald, and maybe Cruz insulted him because the Donald insulted him first. That is very true. If he had not insulted the Donald so regularly, I think he could have been a vice presidential candidate for the Donald. Although then what would we do with Carly Fiorina? A vice president doesn't have her own vice president, if you see what I mean. So she could fall off the stage and nobody could get her off the ground that time. I've got to tell you though, I wanted to play it on the air. Then I realized it was all in the visual. But I mean, to see her fall off, it was like something on Saturday Night Live. She just is there 1 second, she's gone the next. And Ted Cruz comes out, does not even attempt to get her off the ground. But you couldn't really see her because there's so many people there. Anyway, but I of course, because I've been asking this question over and over again, do you believe that that Cruz was called by God to run. It's quite possible, but I don't know. I mean, if he was called to run, does that mean he wins? Or does that mean if he ran a different race, would he have won? I don't know. I'm just curious. And some people, there's an interesting debate about prayer. Some people think that prayer changes things. Other people argue that God is perfect and everything that was meant to be was set into motion from time immemorial. And so prayer doesn't really change anything. And I'm not trying to start a debate, especially when there are probably a fair number of agnostics or atheists listening in. But I just find it interesting. Now, I have a friend of mine who says, I like it when you talk about religion, the beliefs. I'll get into it later. We've got Miss Souls coming in today. So she's going to be coming on the show. Well, she stands me up, which is, it's one of those things that you get used to as a host of an early show, is that people stand you up, but nothing personal, I'm sure. But unless it was Ken Miyagashima, but I don't think he ever stood me up. I can think of a Republican who stood me up a few times, but anyway, be that as it may, Ted Cruz is out of the game. And how do you feel about it? 523-1450. So this is what I think. I think in these primaries are very important, because what happens is in the primary, the candidates are pushed and you have debates and people, you know, take a position on issues and then the other candidates attack them or criticize them. And stuff comes out about their record, their background, their beliefs. And then, but I think one of the important things is that the candidates push each other in the direction that the voters or the grassroots people are interested in. This is representational politics. There is something that has happened that is just monstrously or just pathologically mistaken in American politics. This country is not based on a messianic model of leadership. That is Marxism. Marx has people that communism and socialism have people that show up that are the smartest person in history, the greatest writer, the greatest speaker. And then those people are basically worshiped. And I mean, look at the history of USSR and China. The American model is representational government. And there has been a very strong element in American politics against this. And you see it in the Republican Party right now. The great mistake is the Republican elites act like they're above the people and their opinions don't matter. And the problem with that is the elites are not living an average everyday life. They're not having to deal with unemployment, low wages, and a broken healthcare system that is supposedly fixed by this crazy Obamacare. And they're not dealing with all this stuff on the ground. They're not dealing with the illegal issues and stuff. So that's why these plans by the elites fall apart, because they're not based in reality. And then it's the people, it's you and I on the ground that are left to pick things up. So anyway, it was good for Cruz to be in there, and it was good for him to stay in as long as he did. I haven't heard anybody say anything about Kasich dropping out, but I think Kasich may have been waiting for Cruz to finish the race. Why didn't Cruz finish the race when he said that he was called to that? I think he was embarrassed. I think that, it wasn't just that he didn't see a way forward, because the way forward closed behind, it closed before Iowa. I think he was embarrassed. And also, I mean, I think, you know, when he, the picture of him giving his speech, he looked happy. He looked like he was glad to be out of the race. So maybe it was more of his wife's idea. Because his wife is supposedly the one that came up with the prayer interpretation. So one of these days in the near future, I'll get into the theology of the people beyond dominion theology. I'll get into charismatic theology a little bit for you. So anyway, let's in my condolence to the Cruz backers. And I know they're uniformly a lot of good people, because you're people that believe in rule of law and the Constitution, and you believe that the Christianity, just like we're talking about, the Christianity that people believe in America should be expressed in the government, in the law. And I completely agree with that. I just had the strongest sense the first time I saw Trump speak and interact with people. I just had this kind of sixth sense that he was going to be the guy. But, you know, anyway, 6/16, 6/17, what we've got to hope for now is that Trump taps into not just the anger, which he has already done, and the disappointment, but taps into the inherent genius of America, which is conservatism, constitutionalism, the rule of law, the Bill of Rights, and to know that we are not we're not a country of elites. We're a vast country of people who want, you know, to live lives of, you know, popular representation and constitutionalism. We want to be protected by the law, not beaten down by it. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, 617 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'll come back with a few clips for you from Cruz and Trump. 523-1450. I think I might have the text machine in my car. I'm going to have to run out there. 618 on the money. We'll be right back. Okay, 6:22, and we have Mary Souls coming on a little bit later. But here's Donald's. Here's a little bit of Donald's speech, and so a friend of mine is texting me, telling me how Pete, you know, Pete from Florida, he's always giving me a lecture on politics. He's telling me how Hillary, it's going to be an electoral vote, a landslide. And I said, I think Trump's going to win. Well, he said, absolutely not. And so I said, you know, I'm looking at this, you know, thing while I'm texting him the speech. All right. So this is, and this might sound basic or a caveman or whatever you want to call it. Would you rather look at Hillary or Trump's family? You know, Trump may not be the best looking guy, but he's got the spectacularly attractive family and wife and everything. And I think a certain percentage of people are going to turn off Hillary and start watching the Trump. I mean, I'm joking a little bit, but you know, Hillary is unpleasant. She's, you know, her speeches are a truck driver who just just smoked a handful of crack. She shouts and screams and talks down and hectors and giving his speeches. He's surrounded by these beautiful women. So anyway, you know, personally, I think that'll have some impact on a lot of people. 6:23 though, but here is Donald Trump's well, not his full speech, but just a little introduction to it.
I want to start by, as always, thanking my family, my wife, Melania, my kids. They're not kids anymore, but they're kids as far as I'm concerned. They'll always be my kids. And I want to thank my great parents who are looking down right now, and my brother looking down on us. I want to thank my entire family, including Marianne, Elizabeth, Robert. And it's been some unbelievable day and evening and year. Never been through anything like this, but it's a beautiful thing to watch and a beautiful thing to behold. And we're going to make America great again. So important. The people of Indiana have been incredible. I started, as you know, not very long ago, about 6 weeks ago, and I was told I had a 20-point deficit. And I went there, and I worked very hard, and I campaigned, and I made lots of speeches, and met lots of incredible people. You don't get better. And the crowds got bigger and bigger, and toward the end, it was like I didn't want to leave. I almost said, maybe I'll just never leave. And it resonated somehow. And we had a tremendous victory tonight. It was a tremendous victory. And I have to thank Bobby Knight. Boy, Bobby Knight was incredible. People like that, there aren't many, but it's called tough, smart, and they know how to win. And that's what our country needs. We have to win again. We have to know how to win. And we haven't won. We've been losing all the time. We lose with our military. We can't beat ISIS. We lose with trade. We lose with borders. We lose with everything. We're not going to lose. We're going to start winning again. We're going to win bigly. So when I got back tonight and I started watching all of the different networks, I could see immediately that we were doing very well. And it really looks like, I think it looks like we win all 57 deltas.
Well, we're getting a little static in there, but anyway, so he goes on to thank Ted. Now here's a little bit of Ted's speech for you.
God bless the Hoosier State. Let me tell you about the America that I love. Our nation, is an exceptional nation. We were founded by risk takers and pioneers, brave men and women who put everything on the line for freedom. We began with a revolutionary idea that our rights don't come from kings or queens or even presidents, but from God Almighty. That every one of us has an unalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that to protect those rights, the Constitution serves as chains to bind the mischief of government. For more than two centuries, we have protected those rights. We believe in equal rights for everybody, that everybody deserves dignity and respect, whether they agree with you or not. That there will always be evil in the world and injustice in the world, but America stands up to it and confronts it. Even from a Montgomery jail, our voice for justice and equality rings out for the ages. America is hopeful, optimistic. America is kind. We are not boastful or mean-spirited. America is brave. We keep our word, and we believe in peace through strength. We have spilled more blood, spent more treasure in defense of liberty than any country in history. Yet we do not engage in wars of conquest. We do not seek to enrich ourselves at our neighbor's expense. America is the land that gave my mom, an Irish-Italian girl growing up in a working-class family, the chance to be the first in her family ever to go to college, to become a pioneering computer programmer in the 1950s.
All right, so this is 15 minutes, 14 minutes long, so let's take a break from this, and I'll see if I can find some highlights for you. But just to know that Cruz dropped out of the race and never mentioned Donald Trump. And you know what? I understand that Donald Trump is, and by the way, I have never told anybody that I am going to vote for Trump. If Trump's the nominee for the Republican Party, assuming that kind of plays out, at this point, it looks like inevitable versus Clinton. It's a no brainer, but I've never in my mind chosen Trump over Cruz. I'm just doing the show every day. But I honestly don't understand this idea that, you know, Trump is uniquely evil and is more awful than any of the Democrats, and therefore he has to be resisted. And like right there, for Cruz to not even mention him is just it's a travesty. It's a scandal, you know. You're in a party and you run for office, and I understand you lose, and it's a very bitter experience. But, you know, people are going to remember that in the future if he wants to run again for office, president or whatever. People are going to remember that he's a poor loser. You know, all this stuff from this campaign and you know, Trump figured out a way to win. And he did it fair and square. And I think that, you know, if Cruz had gotten up and thanked Trump, you know, for the experience and for besting him and everything, people would have remembered that as a statesman-like statement. But for him to get up and pretend that, you know, in my opinion, getting up and pretending that Trump is too terrible to even mention and has to be, you know, disrespected, that's not going to, you understand now why people say he's not a nice person and obviously a very talented, you know, you got to put whatever personal, you know, feelings that you have. Aside my opinion, 523-1450 if you disagree on this particular one, but put it aside and, you know, say it's for the good of the party or because you're a Christian. I mean, if Ted Cruz claims to be a Christian and I have no inside information that he's not, then why wouldn't he, you know, why wouldn't he put it on display? And putting it on display, in my opinion, means to stand up and to be gracious, you know. Anyway, we'll take a break here. 633 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. But I have no idea that a Trump presidency will be full of challenges and also would be I assume that if he was president, he would do things that people didn't like on the right side. But every president does things that are not uniformly popular through the party. But I mean, I think the reason that Trump was victorious is people on the right are tired of apologizing for what they believe, are tired of standing back, stepping down, keeping their opinions to themselves, and being told time and time again that this politically correct set of, you know, 10 commandments or whatever is reality, and they either have to acknowledge it or leave public life. People are sick and tired of that, and they're very worried that the country is going to be destroyed by political correctness. 634, we'll be right back. All right, on the other side of the aisle, Bernie Sanders surprised Hillary Clinton, and that race is, I guess, not over. I mean, the Republican race ended before the Democrat race, believe it or not. Here's a little bit from his speech.
Then we're going to Kentucky and we're going to Oregon. We think we have a pretty good chance to win there as well. And then we're going to another bunch of other states, culminating in the largest state in the United States with the most delegates, and that is the state of California. And we think we have a pretty good chance to win there. And I think that as more and more delegates to the Democratic convention take a hard look at which candidate is generating the kind of enthusiasm, excitement, voter turnout that we need to make sure that somebody like a Donald Trump does not become president, I think you're going to see more and more delegates concluding that that candidate is Bernie Sanders. And the reason for that is that the issues that we are talking about in this campaign are the issues that are on the hearts and minds of the American people. The American people are tired of working longer hours, low wages.
How is Bernie Sanders in his socialism going to fix America's economy? I mean, that's like one of the most ludicrous things that I've ever heard. You know, the sad thing about socialism, and it sounds like a good idea on the surface, I guess, according to some people, but to me, it just sounds idiotic. But socialism is proven not to work. So why, you know, we're supposedly a scientific society, right? So why don't people inside the Democratic Party stand up to Sanders? And I mean, maybe Hillary has done it, but just to say the way that you're leading us is towards destruction, socialism does not work. And therefore, you know, you need to come up with a new plan. But anyway, here's a little bit of Newt Gingrich on what's going to happen with the Republican Party going into the future and whether Trump can build a big tent at 6:40 on AM Las Cruces.
Unity, you said in a couple of interviews ago before, I guess, the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast primaries, that it would be on the shoulders of the winner to unite the party. What's the best way, the most effective way to get there?
Well, he did two good things tonight. He praised Ted Cruz and he praised Ryan Spiegel. And he said, look, we all got to work together. That's a very helpful step in the right direction. I know that with Paul Manafort's leadership, they've been reaching out to all sorts of folks in Washington. And I've heard the other day Trump say some very positive things about Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader. I mean, the way you do this is largely by humans talking to humans. And I think there is a potential for Trump to bring into a much larger tent. And then that's the key. This will be a much bigger Republican Party 3 months from now.
And that's what's a little by the numbers of people that showed up. And I guess a lot of people, maybe blue collar Reagan Democrats, would once again join the fold of the Republican Party. Look ahead to a Trump versus Hillary matchup. How does that go down?
Well, I think it depends. One of the biggest decisions, there are two big decisions Trump has to make. And he's the guy. He's going to have to make the decisions. Nobody else is. The first is he willing to run a 50-state campaign, or is he going to follow his consultants and try to cleverly target six or seven states? That's the first big decision, because those are two radically different campaigns. I obviously favor a 50-state campaign. That's how he took control in 94. That's how Reagan won a big victory in 1980. The second big decision is, does he only run an anti-Hillary campaign, or does he line up the entire left? So that, for example, the corruption of the VA being defended by the government employee unions, who are Hillary's allies, becomes a definition of Hillary. The failure of inner city schools because of, for example, the teachers union in Detroit going having a sick out in a system where 91% of the kids fail their tests, and those are Hillary's allies. So he can go for a big decision, tie Hillary to every element of the left and beat all of them, or he can try to narrowly beat just Hillary. And those are the two big decisions he faces.
Who would be, besides you, a good VP choice?
Well, there are dozens of good VP choices. Marco Rubio is an absolutely talented person who would do very, very well. Susana Martinez, the governor of New Mexico, is enormously talented. Scott Walker, who is...
Susana Martinez, number two choice. That's incredible.
Through the kind of fight. Because remember, if Trump wins and Trump actually tries to change Washington, it's going to be just like Madison, Wisconsin. You're going to have left-wingers in the streets. You're going to have daily demonstrations. So Walker has some background that could be very, very exciting. Rick Snyder in Michigan, a very attractive governor, got the right to work passed in Michigan, has been a very good reformer. So I can look around and see 6, 8, 9 different people that they could look at who would be very good part of a Trump. And remember, you have no idea what Trump's range is. I mean, he could decide to pick a retired four-star general. You could pick a lot of different people that you and I wouldn't think of because he is so unique that he's not bound by the normal conventions.
All right, Mr. Speaker, thank
you. No pun intended. All right, okay, so take a break here and come back 6:43. We're going to be talking to Miss Souls, got to have souls. And she's running for the U.S. House race against Steve Pearson. She's going to be on at 7 in theory. I've learned to hedge my bets, though. You know, sometimes people love sleep more than they love coming on the air. As astonishing an idea as that is. But we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Cali O'Connor, 523-1450. And I'm going to go out and search my vehicle for the text machine. All right, 6:46, and 6:47, maybe you're laying in bed wondering what the temperature is. It's 56 degrees. All right, here is, remember we've been on a Beck watch for a while here. Glenn Beck is, I think, went so far out of the... he just stepped so far out of his lane. And I can't imagine getting up and giving prophecies, repeated prophecies. I mean, all right. So anyway, here he is. Glenn Beck, huge drudge font size, mocking my fast for Ted Cruz's sign that America is done. America's prophet lashing out. Check this out.
Headline number one, boys might. I mean, this is in huge, drudge font size. Boy smites Cruz at rally. You suck, he screams. Beck, fast and pray for 24 hours. Again.
Good God, he's doing it again?
That's a story? That's your lead story that Glenn Beck has asked people to fast and pray about this election.
This is the front page again?
Yeah, it's his lead thing right under the photo of a really bad photo of
you know what?
I'm just wondering if Glenn Beck's like his co-hosts or whatever, if they're secretly just wishing the whole thing would collapse so they could go work for Walmart or something.
Then let me just say this, please, I beg of you, please, not for Ted Cruz, not for Donald Trump, not for any, but for our country,
mm-hmm.
please, please fast and pray, please. We were losing the Civil War until Abraham Lincoln called for a day of fasting, prayer, and humiliation. And what we need to do is humble ourselves, humiliation, humble ourselves and say, your will, whatever your will is, please, just your will. We turn to you and we ask for forgiveness.
But did Joseph Smith ever do that? I don't know.
We know we are mocking you. We know that we are chasing you out of our life. We know that. I mean, when I started the show today with something from Howie Carr, when talk radio and Matt Drudge, who are supposed to be conservative bastions, are coming out and saying and mocking people who believe in God, who believe in divine providence, who believe that the Constitution and the Declaration are divine documents. When you mock that, we're done.
All right, so Glenn Beck, but I mean, I just find it very, very strange that he continues to stand up and claim that he's speaking for God. I mean, I'm all in favor of, you know, prophetic utterances, but I don't know, the way that he does it is so strange. I mean, that he is, in his mind, the Pope of America. Isn't that weird? Okay, so anyway, well, let's take a little break here. 6:50, we're going to have Miss Souls on, Mary Lee Souls, at 7 o'clock. I have indications she'll be in the studio, and we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. Your text line, 805-6180. Get those texts in here. Be right back. Okay, so anyway, my take on this whole thing here. Well, here is. Do you remember the young African American ladies that are Trump supporters, Diamond and Silk? Here's their response to the victory of Trump.
Yes, baby. He won Indiana.
Yes.
Trump just won Indiana. Boom. The tides have changed.
Yes.
The tables have.
Simon and Silk. And so anyway, so there's a question for you. How much minority vote will Donald Trump be able to pick up is an ongoing question. But there is a larger amount of Hispanic and Black voters that have supported him so far. But we won't know that until the convention in the general election. So anyway, some of your headlines for you. Obviously, Trump won the Indiana primary with a walk-off grand slam. And so Trump, Cruz is out, and some people are surprised because they thought that he was going to fight all the way till the end. And fight for the brokered convention, but it became clear that Trump was going to come in with more than 1,237 delegates. And so, bearing that in mind, then it becomes more of an ideological fight than really a fight over delegates. And more and more people are kind of pouring in behind Trump, seeing his inevitability. Kasich, I don't know what he's still doing in there, but now the question is, who's going to be the vice presidential nomination? You heard the second person mentioned by Newt Gingrich was Susana Martinez. So she's on somebody's list. And Marco Rubio would be a very attractive, charismatic, and upbeat vice president, very smart guy. And also you've got Newt Gingrich. You've got Walker out of Wisconsin. You've got, I think Mike Huckabee might be one of the most attractive people. You want a kind of a counterbalance to Trump's insulting, audacious approach to things, and not maybe the most Christian guy out there. And so Mike Huckabee, who's a former minister and a five-time governor of Arkansas, would be a good, he's just got a great touch with people. He has a pastoral interaction. So some other news. Canadian oil sand town is on fire, 80,000 residents evacuating, and Obama is going to be visiting Flint, Michigan to talk, I guess, water. And some of your other stories there, for the Democrats, there's still a battle over who is going to be the nominee. I mean, I think it's cinched up in terms of delegates, but I think that there is some ease. There's a lack of ease in the party with Hillary between her ethical or legal issues on the one hand, and the fact that she's not grabbing a lot of the younger people, including younger women. And there is kind of a fight for the soul of the Democratic Party, whether socialism is the next phase in the evolution. So we're at 6:59. We've got Mary Lee Soles, who's going to be on in the next hour. And we're gonna find out about her background and her ideas. Kelly O'Connell, 6:59 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. I forgot to get to your text, but I will next hour on 805-6180 for your text. We'll be back after a break on the hour. Okay, it's 7:06, and it is a little bit under 60 degrees. It's real nice outside. And as you know, we had a major event in Indiana last night. The Republican primary is over. The questions are over. Trump is the nominee. There's not going to be a brokered convention. Kasich is still hanging in there like a barnacle on the Titanic, but it's over. Now, there's still a fight in the Democratic Party. Sanders showing amazing strength, especially for a dead man, and he won in Indiana. I don't know what's going to happen with the Democrats because there are so many superdelegates out there, and the party may have to do an accounting and figure out how to justify the superdelegates with the vote tally. And the fact that there's a lot of dissatisfaction with Hillary within the party, especially in the younger people, a lot of whom are supporting socialism. And I mean, that's all there is to it. But anyway, today we have on the show Mary Lee Soles, and she's running for Congress. And good morning to you, Mary Lee.
Good morning, Kelly.
Great to have you on the show.
Thank you. May I also say good morning to Cheryl Soles, my stepmother, who's listening all the time.
God bless you, Cheryl. She listens to this show all the time.
She does indeed.
She, well, that's fantastic. I like your card, Mary Lee. I'm looking at your card. There's a little star. There's a Capitol building in the background. So you must have had this done by a professional.
We actually did it through Design Crowd, where we asked them to design something appropriate for my run for Congress here in CD2 in New Mexico. We got quite a number of folks that put forward designs, and that was the winning design.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Very is one of the nicest ones I've ever seen. So tell folks, where is Mary Lee Soles from? Where did you arise?
I am from Las Cruces.
All right.
Grew up here.
Fantastic.
Can't claim to have been born here. My folks came here when my dad took a job at New Mexico State back in the 50s. I was 1 year old. So they traveled from Ohio to New Mexico, sight unseen. I still can't get my brain around this. My mother thought she was going to the Sahara Desert.
Not too far off, is it?
Quite a bit far off. New Mexico is a beautiful place to call home.
Well, you know, I mean, it is until you get here, you don't understand that, you know, it's not just one big desert. We've got all these mountains and forests and there's so many spectacular things here. It's kind of an undiscovered gem in America.
The place I call home.
All right. So you grew up here and then you went to school. What did you study?
Oh, so once I graduated from high school, I got my degree in electrical engineering.
Wow, that's not really too touchy-feely.
No, it's not. Now, true confession, I started out in music and political science.
Oh, fantastic.
And dropped out because it was too touchy-feely.
Okay. What is your instrument?
Bassoon.
I've got a piano here.
We could play together.
Did you want to show off? Do you have your bassoon with you?
I should have brought it. I'll bring it next time.
Okay. Bassoon is a fairly large instrument. All right. So you dropped the bassoon, hopefully figuratively, and you got into – how did you get into electrical – engineering?
I wanted to study something that I could make a difference with. I really saw myself as going into the manufacturing world in this country and climbing the ladder and running something and doing something important.
Which is what you did.
Thank you for that. I think I did make a difference.
I'm guessing.
I made that climb. I didn't go all the way to president of General Motors, which was my original thought.
But you went fairly high up.
I did. I was an executive with General Motors and Delphi Corporation.
I know Delphi.
Yes. Delphi has operations down here in El Paso and in Juarez and throughout Mexico.
Delphi is
throughout the world.
That's parts, right? Delphi?
Automotive parts, yes.
Okay, so you relocated to Michigan, I'm guessing.
Ohio.
Okay.
It was the Packard Electric Division.
Oh, fantastic.
Folks might remember the Packard Automobile.
I do.
The Packard brothers started this company, General Motors. When I joined them, Packard was making wiring. for GM vehicles.
Wasn't there a movie? I'm thinking of maybe Tucker. That movie Tucker that was. Is what? Wipers. Okay.
Not a movie I'm familiar with. Maybe I need to watch it.
Wipers. Hopefully that's not about homeless people in New York, but people that come up and clean your windshield. But are you
recommending it?
I've just heard of Tucker. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen Wipers. But so you went to Ohio and then you got. So what was it like, a female going into the? I would assume mostly male. This probably fairly competitive environment.
I was one of very few women at that time. Since then, it's changed quite a bit. A number of women, I don't think it's quite at 50%, graduating with engineering degrees.
Yeah.
But quite a bit more than in my time.
I gotcha. So did you soften up the competition with your bassoon?
At that point, I wasn't playing. Oh, it wasn't until about 25 years later that I picked it up again.
Oh, okay. So now that's a double reed instrument.
It is.
Yeah. And you still play.
When I took on this run for Congress, I had to give it up. So until the end of last year, I've been playing with the New Horizons Symphony Orchestra here in Las Cruces. I'd recommend anybody that has a free Sunday afternoon when they're giving a concert, they should attend. Right now, I'm no longer playing.
Okay. Temporarily retired. All right. So you were at... General Motors in Ohio with Packard, with electronics.
Packard Electric. My very first job was to design the wiring for the 1979 Buick Riviera. How's that for dating myself?
Well, it could. The Riviera was kind of a classic, wasn't it?
It was a pretty cool car, yes.
A little bit of a boat tail. I'm trying to remember the design. It was kind of a fairly elegant car.
Yes, it was. I thought it was. And, of course, it had my wiring in it, so I was very proud of it.
Okay. All right. So you're there in Ohio, and so how, in your working, you were trying to become president of General Motors and taking your bassoon to all the functions and...
Oh, you got to leave the bassoon.
Oh, got to leave the bassoon out of it. All right. So
we'll get to the bassoon later.
Okay. So you're working over there. Okay. When's the transition back home?
Transition back home was 12 years ago. So I was 27 years basically in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a 2-year difference when I went to Boston. I should tell you about that.
Harvard.
Exactly.
Okay.
I have a degree from the Harvard Business School.
Yes.
When I'm working for Packard, I start out, I'm doing design of wiring harnesses. I'm an engineer. I asked for an assignment in manufacturing because basically the company made its money in manufacturing. That it was all about manufacturing stuff that was needed for cars.
Mm-hmm.
Was out on the plant floor on midnight turn making molded plastic parts that were used in the wiring harnesses. I'm a foreman or woman supervisor.
Did you carry a whip?
I did not.
Okay.
No, we didn't do it that way.
All right. Okay, and?
So while I'm out there in manufacturing, at one point they asked me to figure out why we were losing money. Well, there was nothing going on that had to do with money. We were making parts. We had plastic coming in. We had molded parts going out. What do you mean making money? That led to a very interesting investigation of how we were making money. And it was so convoluted. I'm frustrated. I need to go back to school. This on-the-job training is just not getting at how this business runs. I went into personnel and asked them for a leave of absence. My plan was to go to Cincinnati, live with my mother, and attend the University of Cincinnati to get an MBA.
Mm-hmm.
The company said, you know, why don't you apply for our fellowship program? Basically, they sent me to the Harvard Business School to earn that MBA, and I'm eternally grateful. It was...
Changed your life.
Changed my life totally. It was the stuff of storybooks. I never thought I little old girl from Las Cruces, New Mexico. I never imagined that the Harvard Business School and an MBA could be in my future.
Wow.
Yes, I'm still to this day.
Congratulations.
Grateful.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're talking to Mary Lee Soles and a little bit about her past, and we'll take a break here at 7:16 once again. And you heard me playing this morning Taps for all the Cruz supporters, and you do have my sympathy. But Cruz is out of the game, and Bernie Sanders is still in there. He's just doggedly fighting for the soul of the party and to bring some socialism to America. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450, 523-1450, and 805-6180. We will be right back with Mary Lee Soles. Got to have souls. Well, Kelly, here 7:21. We're lucky to have Mary Lee Soles in the studio. And okay, so Mary Lee, you're at Harvard, and you're really kind of pinching yourself and saying, "How did I get here?" And so what are some of the takeaways that you had from Harvard? Big lessons.
Wow, big lessons. That I did not want to go to Wall Street, and I didn't want to go into consulting.
All right.
I really did want to be in industry. I wanted to be part of adding real value to what's going on in this country.
All right. And so, okay, so you wanted to help build the economy up and make us more prosperous, it sounds like.
So that's the language we would use today. Back then, it felt a little bit different. We weren't kind of having, that I was sensitive to, some of the same crazy stuff going on today where people are so sick and tired of what's going on. So back then it was simply a matter of this is what you do. You add value.
All right. But I mean, the value is through the economy growing. I mean, you're building up industry.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. So, and then when you came back to Cruises, what was going on?
So I came back 12 years ago. I actually spent the last 3 years before I retired working in Juarez. So I lived in Las Cruces, crossed the border every working day, did my work there, came home to Las Cruces.
But you're working for still General Motors?
Delphi Corporation.
Delphi, okay.
At that point. So Delphi got spun off.
Right.
Corporations do this strange thing where the same entity changes its identity.
Yeah.
Similar maybe to the way women will change their name when they marry or unmarry, and yet they're still the same person.
All right. Interesting analogy. Okay. So, all right. So you're working in Juarez, and those were kind of dangerous days down there?
It was before,
oh, okay.
Before the craziness with the cartels and the violence and all of that. I think they're back to being pretty much back to normal, that has settled down. I did not work in Juarez when it was violent.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. And so, all right. So what drew you into the political sphere after Juarez?
So I retired. And now what I do with my days is discretionary, where when I was working in the corporate world, there's not a whole lot of extra time.
Uh-huh.
Now I had the ability to look around and decide what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And it seemed like the opportunity to start giving back, to work for my community. And in various ways, ever since then, that's what I've been doing.
Well, glad to have you back. And so, all right, so you're running against Steve Pearce. He's considered to be pretty strong. I mean, that must have been a little bit daunting.
Well, of course. And anytime you put yourself out in the public, and it feels very daunting. It's a new adventure every day.
Right.
And so you can't kind of prepare for everything that comes up.
That's true. You'd have to be a Hindu to totally prepare for everything in life. Reincarnation.
And they also keep it very simple, don't they?
Yeah, they do keep it pretty simple.
For the rest of us, most of what we face every day is pretty complicated.
Complicated, and so you're right. There's not a lot of dress rehearsals for some of the most important things.
I think that's right. That's a good way to put it.
All right, so let's take a break here. We're talking to Mary Lee Soles and finding out more. We'll come back and find out what some of your political ideas are.
I'm looking forward to
okay.
it.
Okay. 725 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523 1450, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. Thank you. Okay. It is 7:30, and we've got Mary Lee Souls here. Okay, Mary Lee, so we've got the background, your Ohio upbringing and getting into GM and going to Harvard, and then ended up getting sent to Juarez, and then you retired and came to Cruces, and then the political part of your life began to grow and blossom.
Fair enough.
I was going to say I want to ask what that was fertilized with, but but seriously. So how, you know, you jumped into this race and so, but you seem like you seem fairly confident and, you know, composed. So you must've been thinking about this for quite a while.
No, I wouldn't say I was thinking about it for quite a while.
All right.
The political activity started when I ran for school board. I don't remember which year that was, but I believe in public education. I know there's problems, but my general approach is to get involved and fix it.
Make a difference, too.
Absolutely. I lost that school board race by 2 votes.
Ooh, you should have come on the show.
I don't think you were doing the show at that
time. Oh, okay, because I could have got you 2 votes.
Well, the 2 votes were out there. There was maybe 50 votes out there that people would point out to me afterwards, oh, I would have voted for you.
If I had only known.
If I had only known, or if I hadn't had a cold that day, or if I had realized I was in your district. It was the first lesson for me in how important every vote is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a great believer in democracy. I think it is the foundational thing that makes our country great.
How about republicanism?
I'm much happier with democracy.
Isn't democracy, though, the danger of democracy without republicanism, mob rule? We have to diffuse power.
So help me with some definitions so I know what you're really saying.
Republicanism is this idea that the founders kind of fell in love with, that we would build up our institutions and the institutions would help establish and you know, different power centers. And so it wouldn't be just, you know, direct votes on everything, that we would have, you know, obviously the House and the Senate and the separation of powers and everything. But we've got, you know, America has more than any other country, great traditions of institutionalism that helps to develop, you know, power and take part in the political process. And I mean, these two parties are private entities, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, which we've been reminded with during this fantastic primary process.
I would take my definition of democracy, which is that each and every one of us has an equal vote, an equal choice in our representative government.
But we also have a duty to be educated.
Okay. Doesn't take away that basic right.
Sure.
So amongst us collectively, I think we have a collective responsibility for education if
right.
We're concerned about the lack of education.
Okay, so let's tap into your issues.
Okay.
What is first and foremost in your mind besides democracy, one person, one vote?
Well, we should talk a little bit more about democracy, perhaps, because I see people disillusioned with what's going on in government, walking away from democracy.
What kind of criticisms have you heard, that, you know, specific criticisms that people have kind of delivered to you?
Our government is for sale, that my vote doesn't count, and nobody's listening. I'm not being represented.
Mm-hmm.
That it's all about these big power brokers, and it's no longer worth bothering to participate in our democracy.
Okay.
I find that tragic.
All right. And that's some of the fervor that's been driving both primaries. You've got the people who in the Republican Party who feel like the elites have tried to take over and force their will on the people. And then you've got in the Democratic Party this idea, the superdelegates predetermined for Hillary. And so on both sides of the aisle, people are feeling like exactly what you're talking about. There's this elite group that wants to run everything and disenfranchise people.
I think that's fair. I really do think that's fair. And people have given up. People are sick and tired of what's going on. empty promises, power circles, and that they've walked away. Why bother?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something I want to try and address.
All right. So how would you address that? If you got elected, how would you, on a practical level, from your position, address those issues of disenfranchisement?
So this entire election cycle seems to be about throwing out those traditional power structures and taking a different approach. Outsiders are getting a lot of attention, clearly.
Mm-hmm. By definition.
I'm an outsider. I've not been elected to this. I haven't gone up the political chain. I think I have some fresh ideas. And I will be, I am, respectful of the great diversity that there is in this district.
Okay.
So for our listeners,
yes,
this congressional district is the sixth largest district in the country.
Oh.
It is two-thirds geographically of the state of New Mexico.
Wow.
It's huge. So imagine it goes all the way from Hobbs over in the east corner, southeast corner, up to the Zuni Pueblo in the west side of the state, which is not all the way to the north corner, but it's two-thirds of the way to the north corner.
It's very vast. It's vast.
It's vast and diverse.
Yes.
Very different people with different challenges and issues, different cultural backgrounds.
Uh-huh.
It's very diverse. I would say it's time for all of those voices to be heard and respected.
Well, let's take a little break here, and we'll come back and talk about that a little bit more, about the voices and how you're planning on helping them become more enfranchised.
Very good. I'm looking forward
okay.
to it.
Okay. Talking to Mary Lee Soles, and she's running for the Congress. She's running against Steve Pierce. 737, flying the friendly skies here on KOBE 1450 AM Las Cruces, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-61802 text. We will be right back. Here's a little bit of weather for you. It's 7:41. And we're here with, it's 7:41 and we're here with Mary Lee Soles. Mary Lee, and she's running for U.S. Congress. Mary Lee, how do people contact your campaign and help out or find out more?
So we have a website. That's where I would suggest people start. SoulesUSCongress.com. That's S-O-U-L-E-S, USCongress.com.
Got to throw the E in there.
That's correct.
Souls with an E.
Souls with an E.
Okay, and is there a phone people can call?
There is. I never remember this number because it's on the card. Perhaps you'll read it.
575-405-0229 to call in, and then mailing P.O. Box 536 Fair Acres, New Mexico, 88033. Okay, so what's on your mind in terms of what we need to do here? We can talk about democracy, and that's somewhat of an, you know, that's abstruse or it's kind of vague in people's minds.
Let's talk about the economy.
Let's do it. What's
it's
going
still
on?
Still about the economy.
It stinks in this county.
So New Mexico's stuck. I think the economy improves when the money moves, and this notion of movement is what makes the economy go or not.
Right.
And we're stuck. New Mexico is still last in poverty, last in children going to bed hungry,
mm-hmm.
and young people don't see opportunity on the horizon right here at the place they call home. We need to do something about that.
What can we do?
Well, let's fix it.
What can we do to fix it?
So let me tell you a story. When I was working for for Delphi. At one point, I was part of making a decision about our next facility, where we were going to locate our next manufacturing. And of course, we looked at all kinds of possibilities. What finally made the big difference in that decision was the cost of electricity. Manufacturing uses a huge amount of electricity. Low-cost, reliable electricity became the deciding factor. The net result of that adventure was we put manufacturing in Ohio and not in Mexico because of the cost of electricity.
That's fascinating.
Here in New Mexico, energy in many, many forms appears to me to be our future.
How so?
So traditionally, it's been oil, gas, and coal. I'm afraid climate change means we need to create a new future around that. I don't know what that future is. But as we transform to thinking about energy and moving into sun and wind and geothermal, maybe even safe nuclear alternatives, New Mexico is perfectly positioned to do that.
All right. So speak to the people. Many in the audience would be skeptical of the global warming issue. They would see it as either divided or maybe even false. Is there an economic argument for diversifying energy outside of global warming, in your opinion?
Well, I want to start someplace else. My father's a physicist. I grew up in a household where you didn't deny science. So I can't start there. The scientists say climate change is real. I'm not arguing with the scientists. So I'm ready to get on with creating a future that's not denying what the scientists are saying. So we just can't go there or my dad will disinherit me.
Is he a multimillionaire?
He's not. He's a physicist.
All right. So don't worry about it. No, but seriously, you know, you're talking about diversity. There's a diverse opinion out there, too. It's not just ethnic. And I'm just wondering, and I have a friend, Pete, in Florida, and he and I have fought like, you know, cats and dogs over a lot of this stuff. And he's talking about the green future. But I'm wondering, you know, if we're talking about it as this kind of this huge epic battle between the left and the right over whether there's global warming, there has to be an argument that it's also economically viable, that it can take the place of oil and coal and gas and everything without radically increasing the cost of living, because you want to build an economy here, and the economy is going to be based on the fact that it's profitable to run businesses in this state, in this county.
Absolutely. So what I know already is that renewable energy, solar generation of electricity is less expensive than generation with fossil fuels.
Okay.
That's where we're at today.
All right.
And that take away all the subsidies and everything else, get right to the bottom line. The next investment I would make, clearly in solar.
Okay.
So we're already there. What we have to deal with is how do we transition into that future?
How do we do it?
So low-cost electricity becomes both the means and the end. Low-cost electricity is what allows us to attract industry. When industry comes, then there's the suppliers to that industry. They're the customers of that industry. There's all of the logistics of managing that success. I'm excited about that kind of future.
Interesting. And we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. I have Mary Lee Souls here. And who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Jim. How are you doing today?
Unbelievably well. Thanks for asking. And what's on your mind?
Well, I've listened to Mary Lee Souls, and I noticed that when she mentioned alternative energy, that I'd like to ask her a question. Are you saying that you do not want to continue exploration of oil?
Exploration of oil? Is that what your question
is? Yeah, I want to know what you think about oil. You seem to talk about all these alternatives, Mary Lee, but naming one of those things that you talked about that's going to fly our airplanes and do other things that oil does. So what is your opinion on oil?
Oh, so at this point, you should know that I drive a diesel-fueled automobile.
Does it have 18 wheels?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it has quite a bit fewer wheels. And diesel can be done off of biodiesel as well as petroleum products.
Okay. Tell me how you go about doing that.
Excuse me?
Tell me how you go about doing that, because it's a byproduct of oil and gas.
Well,
so tell me how you're going to do that.
Jim, I think she's saying that there is a diesel that's available out there that can be created through manufacturing as opposed to oil exploration. Am I correct in that, Mary Lee?
That's correct.
So let's go back to the alternative energy.
Yes.
Did you mentioned nuclear in a negative sense. So what is your problem with nuclear?
So the nuclear fuel that we've been using so far has a number of safety concerns to it. And the technology, you look at Fukushima, and that was an economic disaster. A huge amount of value was lost in that meltdown. There are alternatives that don't have the same downsides. I want to be looking towards the future because...
Okay, well, you noticed that Fukushima, one of the critics about Fukushima's location where it was located, in an area that was very subject to flood and to hurricane and to water damage. Now, we looked at that area. It's a location area. Now, I come from nuclear background, and I was chief engineer in two nuclear plants up in Illinois. And we had people coming and talking about torus rings and feedwater bypass valves. Are you familiar with why Three Mile Island went down?
I'm familiar that it did. I'm certain that you know more about the details.
Well, it was because of the installation of a manual valve in the reactor dome, and it was not able to be obtained to be able to shut down the feedwater bypass pump. Now, my question is this, that was solved, and one of the problems with it was, Mary Lee, was environmentalists were coming in doing studies. And they were complaining of farmers saying that because of the amount of rads that were radiation content was released from the reactors, that their cows were dying. Well, they went back and looked at the environmental studies and found out that the wind had nothing to do with cows dying. The cows are dying in natural causes because of problems in the ground. And also the fact that the storage, as you well know, has always been a problem.
Well, Jim, hold on a second before this is getting a little far afield, no pun intended, but let me ask you this. Isn't it true that the technology at Fukushima was, from what I understand, that they had used these reactors that were designed for submarines, and the technology was not updated, and so there's a kind of a crisis in the nuclear energy field in terms of technology?
Well, true, but whether they were or not, Kelly, and is the fact that it was not a reaction to that problem until the location of the plant itself was affected by the damage from the storm. There was no difficulty with any radiation releases. There was no difficulty with any reactors because the reactors, I don't know who made their reactors, but I do know General Electric was involved with a lot of steam generators and a lot of those different components we use here.
Jim, you could talk for days on this subject, but I got another call. It was a great call. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Sorry, folks, we're running out of time. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
It's Karen. Good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, Mary Lee, I wanted to just make a comment that everything she says just sounds really good, but she's not giving specifics. And so when she just referred to biodiesel for running our military and aircraft, and, you know, that's the alternative, she's not saying how in the heck we would pay for this in this country. And I want to direct people to the New York Times in the business section. It was a couple months back. And the heading is military spending on biofuels. And the military did, I don't know, millions of dollars worth of biodiesel. And they tried it in their ships and their planes. And yes, it worked fine, but the cost was prohibitive. And the cost per gallon for biodiesel for the military spending for all their ships, planes, whatever, it was $27 a gallon compared to $3.50 a gallon for conventional military fuels. We can't afford it. With our economy and our debt, it sounds great. It is a great choice when we can afford it, but that's not going to happen. And we're one of the poorest states in the country. And this is her choice. And one last thing, and I'll hang up because I don't want to be long-winded, but the revenue for the state is down because of the gas prices, our natural gas. And so, you know, it's hurting the school districts and everything else throughout the state. It's hurting our state budget. So give us some real items here. How are you going to do this? Because your talk sounds good, but you're not giving any specifics.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks, Karen. It's her first time on the show, folks. And we're going to take a little break here. Did you have anything, any response? I've got a couple of ads that are poking their heads up.
Yeah, I just wanted to say to Karen that much of what she says I agree with. And because it's down, our economy's down because of the oil and gas revenue. I do have some other specific ideas I'm looking forward to talking about.
Well, it's a little bit hard to squeeze everything into an hour, and maybe next time we can do a couple of hours.
Okay.
We'll take a little break here, 7:54, Kelly O'Connell. Unfortunately, we're just getting started on this interview with Mary Lee, and in the time's kind of escaping us. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB. We'll be right back. All right. So somebody says that if Mary Lee doesn't make it in the second district, she'd be a good partner on the show. So,
well, and let me also share, I think that Kelly just offered to be my speechwriter.
I did not. But when I was supporting myself as a writer, those were desperate days. There was
you've moved on.
Oatmeal and, you know, coffee and not much else. But that's when I was stuck in. Anyway, I won't go into my days in Miami. But it's hard to support yourself as a writer, I found out.
It's hard to support yourself as a candidate.
True. So we got 1 minute left here. I'll let you give your 1 minute speech.
Okay.
Why vote for Mary Lee?
Vote for me because we need to take back our democracy, and because our economy in New Mexico is stuck. And it's time to fix that, to get it unstuck, to move us forward. And there's many ways to do it, but we're not going to do it until we change our future. That's what I'm offering to the people of Southern New Mexico. And I'm hoping that when they go to the polls, they'll be thinking about our future.
Fantastic. And contact information one more time.
So go to the website, Soules, that's SOULESUS. Congress.com.
All right. And contact. And anyway, I want to thank Mary Lee for coming on the show today, and your retinue, your posse for coming along. 7:59, we'll take you out with a little acoustic alchemy. Thanks for joining in. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. Ciao.